Good evening. Greg Barth back with another edition of Noir on the Radio. And joining me tonight is someone I've been a fan of for a few years, and that's author Tom Pitts. Tom Pitts received his education on the streets of San Francisco. He remains there, working, writing, and trying to survive. The new edition of his novel, Hustle, is out now from Down and Out Books. His novellas, Piggyback, Snubnose Press, and Knuckleball, One Eye Press, are available now as well. And his new novel, American Static, will be released by Down and Out Books in just a matter of days. In fact, you can pre-order it right now. And you can find links to more of his work at TomPittsAuthor.com. So, Tom Pitts, welcome to Noir on the Radio. It's kind of hard to figure out how we haven't done one of these already.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, thank you, and thank you. Well, because I haven't had a new release out for a while, so I had nothing to flog the streets with. But thank you, and thank you for having me. Glad to finally make it on.
Well, I'm glad to have you as well. So Tom, your bio reads like a work of noir from one of the old masters in itself, and I get the sense that I just really just scratched the surface on a hard lived life. If you could tell us, you know, about who you are, your life on the streets in San Francisco, and how things are for you today.
Well, you know, I mean, you can always spin it a little rougher. I sometimes think that I'm spinning it a little rougher than it was, and you know, I'm kind of kicking up dirt where there's not really much to kick. And then I start telling people a few stories, and I realize, God damn, lucky to have survived what I've endured. But I was lucky. I was truly lucky to not end up like a lot of my peers that I've known throughout the years, which is either dead or in jail. But you know, that's just I guess a blessing. But I moved to San Francisco from Canada, green, you know, naive country boy from Canada back in 1984 to play in a punk rock band, which I did, and things went well, and things were popping. And then in the 90s, things fell apart, and I ended up like so many, you know, just textbook knuckleheads in my same position, strung out on drugs, on the street, committing petty crime, and going through all those things that you think are unique to yourself, but, you know, you come to realize in later in life that you were, you know, just another statistic. But I managed to survive. That's where I met Joe Clifford down there at the bottom rung. And we formed a friendship that not only helped us survive then, but still endures today. And I'm glad to, you know, did I survive and thrive? No, it's not as easy as you might think today. Just taking the drugs out of the equation didn't take being working class or poverty or fighting against the San Francisco aristocracy out of the equation. So I'm truly there still trying to survive, and that's what I do with my wife and children in our little one bedroom apartment out there in the ghetto. And there I am, kicking out books and waiting for the next thing.
Yeah. So what led you to begin writing fiction?
You know, it's a funny story. I was in the early 90s when before everything fell out, but I was still out of my mind on drugs. But I owned a small company, and I was rolling in the dough, at least, you know, by my perception. I was very obsessed with nonfiction, with mafia books especially, and organized crime. And I had a huge mafia book collection. I was, you know, reading these things. And I decided that I was going to – actually, it was I owned a small messenger company. And I had to learn it. Computers were coming in. We had to switch from paper to computers. And I knew I had to learn to type. And my wife at the time was telling me, you know, you got to use one of these, you know, computer programs that shows you how to type, it's like going to typing class, and you do the, you know, you tap the letters one at a time. It's like, you know what, I can't do it. I don't have the wherewithal to focus on that kind of thing. What I'm going to do is I'm going to write my own book, which is what I try to do, my own nonfiction book. So I started to collect a lot of stories about San Francisco and organized crime. And I started doing like these crazy things. I don't know if you ever heard of Bill Romer, but he's the famous FBI guy who was matched against Sam Giancana. He wrote several books, and I called him. I found him in the Tucson phone book and called him for advice and to see who I could speak to in the San Francisco FBI that could give me some tips. And I called the FBI, and they had just been shut down in this huge case because there was a leak to the local newspaper, and it blew out their whole investigation. He's like, sorry, I know you're a friend of Bill's, which I wasn't. I was some kid who called him on the phone out of the blue, and Bill said, yeah, drop my name. It'll be no problem. And I got shut down at my very first, you know, attempt at investigative reporting, and that's when I decided, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to just write fiction instead. And I, you know, I what I got out of that experience was I basically learned to type. But it wasn't until years later, very late, 2009, 2010, around then, that I actually decided, you know what, I'm going to go back. I'm going to not stick my toe in. I'm going to jump in the pool, and I'm really going to make an attempt to do something I've always wanted, which is to write fiction. So there's the long-winded tale for you. I don't always tell people that. Now it's out of the bag.
Yeah, very nice. Now, Tom, your latest novel, American Static, is coming out from Down and Out Books soon, like June 26th, right?
Yeah,
how would
Monday.
You so getting close. How would you describe that novel for our listeners who, you know, only have a few more days to wait before they can get their hands on it?
Well, if it's a listener that has read Hustle, I will say it's better, more layered, more complex, a little tighter, a little faster moving, which is, you know, saying something for me because I loved Hustle. I thought it was a great achievement having written that after, you know, struggling through other things. But American Static is essentially a kid, a naive green kid, not unlike myself when I was a young man, beats the devil at the crossroads, the ultimate bad guy who pulls him along on a journey. The bad guy's being chased by a bad cop. The bad cop's being chased by two good cops. And they're all in line, all chasing one thing, which is a mysterious girl that they all want to get their hands on. But I can't tell you why, because that would reveal too much. But it rolls from there. It's fast moving. It starts in Northern California and ends up in San Francisco. And it's hopefully has a pace that sets it aside from a normal mystery and would push into the thriller category, I hope. There you go.
Well, I love that description of you know, the devil at the crossroads. You know, what a rich place to play in there. You quote a verse from, and I might get the name wrong, Micah Schnabel, maybe, song in the opening pages of American Static. Was that song inspirational as you created this novel?
Well, you know what? I'll be honest with you. It was, the novel was originally called California Libertine, because I felt the definition of libertine, which is someone without morals, kind of fit that dark, charismatic devil figure who is ultimately the centerpiece of the novel, the main character. I don't know. He's not really the protagonist, but he's the main character. But you know, libertine has so many sort of sexual connotations that I think the publisher or my agent at the time felt it was just didn't quite fit. And she suggested I find something else. And I planned to call my next novel, not knowing what the next novel was going to be, I planned to call it American Static because I liked the ring and I liked the feel. And there was something about the idea of a static. And then I realized that it applied pretty well to this one. So I stuck it on there. And as I finished the novel, as I went through the edits and stuff, I realized how well it fit. You know, there's a theme in the song, the line that I took is that in regards to fatherhood, and there's a theme in the book that applies to very well. So that's that. But in my mind, the static that is so American, that is runs through the novel, is the violence, the undercurrent of gun violence. Of just that thing that propels so much of the underclass, the criminal underclass of America, is that constant rumble, that constant buzz, that keeps it moving.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, and I like that. You know, you're saying American Static to you is better than Hustle. That's pretty exciting. I'd like to, you know, maybe take a minute to talk about Hustle. You know, there have only been a few times that I've read a book that put me in a world that's, you know, radically unlike anything I've ever experienced before. And I come away from it feeling like I live that. And, you know, I mean, I'm from Southwest Virginia. I'm thinking of books like Tony O'Neill's stuff, you know,
yeah.
Edward Bunker's No Beast So Fierce. And Hustle is, you know, firmly at the top of that list for me. I would say of all books I've
wow.
read over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I can't really keep track of time, but Hustle is one that stayed with me. And it's, you know, it's kind of a rare thing. And it's the story of a couple of gay hustlers, kind of straight out of, you know, the old song 53rd and 3rd. But it's, you know, to me, it's a noir masterpiece that's unique in the genre. So I'm curious to know, you know, what you hear about that book from readers, and maybe also set that one up for any listeners who may not have read it yet, as hard as that is to imagine.
Well, it's funny. I often hear the same thing, and I hear, you know, when it was getting sent out to the bigger houses to get, you know, it got shut down right away. No one's going to publish this. This is too, it's too radical. It's too crazy. My favorite was the characters are too unsavory. But once it was released, what I hear most often is that people can relate to the characters, and I can't believe I had sympathy for such a, you know, such a scumbag. And I think that is a great achievement, at least for the novel to make people just sort of see the other side of the fence with people that they would otherwise consider degenerates. But my goal with the story was, you know, I've been a drug addict. I've been out in the streets. I wasn't involved in prostitution, but I've certainly been in those single room occupancy hotel rooms with the blood squirting on the roof and the dealers and the withdrawals and all that terribleness. And, you know, drug addiction drives so much crime. And in fiction, even though you have characters that are drug addicts, there's never, for me, a true sense of what it's actually like. And that is the fact that the drugs are what is driving that person. You know, that every 4 or 5 hours, that, you know, their focus shifts from whatever they got to do back to the drugs. They got to find a bathroom. They got to find the man. They got to find the money. And that's, you know, too many times the character stories set up characters as drug addicts, and then they don't return to the fact that that's what's, you know, that's who they are, is addicts. And I wanted to address that and keep it real, as it were. So hopefully that succeeded.
Yeah, I think it comes through in exactly that way. I mean, it puts you there. There's nothing. I mean, it's fiction. There's a plot, you know, that kind of thing. But it's not overly dramatized. You know, I think the seediness of it just kind of grounds it in reality. And you know, these are, I think, Donnie and Rich, I think these are two guys who are driven, you know, by that addiction. To getting that next fix, and it's just amazing to see the mess they get themselves into as a result of that. It's quite believable. And Hustle was favorably reviewed. I mean, extremely so. And you know, as a writer, how does it feel to spend so much time alone creating something, putting it out there, and then waiting for reader reaction, and then only to see an outpouring of appreciation for the thing you created, like happened with Hustle?
Well, it was reassuring, and it was the kind of pat on the back from your peers, mostly because it didn't get, you know, it wasn't reviewed in the bigger publications. It was a snub-nosed release. They did no sort of press, but it did get a buzz, which which is what I was riding on when I wrote American Static, which is, you know, I think a lot of the gas in my tank was the buzz from Hustle. And, you know, to be honest, I'm still, it's still reverberating today. Stuff that I never thought would have happened even 2 years ago is still happening with that book. I mean, you know, there's just bigger interest in it. And I'm, you know, there's, you haven't heard the end of the book yet. there's bigger things in play. That I'm not allowed. No, I'm not allowed. I'm not at liberty to discuss them. I'm too afraid to jinx them. But things are still happening for that book, and hopefully it's still gonna move on to bigger and better things, and more people will get to enjoy the story or immerse themselves in the story. Enjoy might be the wrong word. But I'm curious, that first big, and it was actually a submission to an agent, where a famous New York agent, you know, that had reached out to me, and I thought was going to changed my life. And I sent him the manuscript, and he didn't even read it. He had his agent read it, or had his assistant read it. And that Unsavory just stuck with me. I should have used it as a blurb on the book. But I'm very proud of Hustle, and I'm glad that Eric at Down and Out chose to put it back out again, just as, you know, and he knew that the market was saturated, he wasn't going to make much money, but he wanted to put it back out and give it another chance, and I thank him for that, and that's what started our relationship. So I'm glad to be in the moving car with Eric, that's for sure.
Well, that's great to hear, and just the intriguing thought that there may be more to come for that book. That's exciting because, you know, I read a lot of this stuff, and we're kind of in a golden age right now of gritty, violent, you know, noir fiction that kind of puts you in that ugly world. And Hustle is kind of the one that, you know, when you sift through everything, you know, that's kind of the one that I think that is so much stronger than a lot of things that that's out there. So that's great.
Well, that's
to hear.
That's a true compliment. I'm deeply, deeply appreciative and so much to hear that. I thank you for that. I mean that, and I'll be passing that along to my wife when I get off the air. So I pat myself on the back one more time.
Yeah, I can't. I can't recommend it strongly enough. What would you say draws you and, you know, even the readers for that matter to this this dark form of literature?
Well, for me, I've always liked stories. You know, I've never been that guy who likes superhero movies. And even with crimes, I'm trying to think of some examples of just fantastical crime stuff. You know, the more of extreme example, something like Sin City. But stuff that, you know, I like to be able to feel like things that happen in the story would happen in real life, you know. That bullets don't always find their mark, you know. Guys don't always say exactly what they think they're gonna say, you know. They lose fights, and you know the mistakes happen. Because I know from personal experience that criminals are not geniuses. They're not, you know, master jewel thieves, you know, sneaking cat burglaring people's apartments in the middle of the night. They're clumsy criminals that make mistakes, and they're fuck ups, or they wouldn't be criminals in the first place. And that's I think what not only draws me to a lot of quality kind of stuff. One that I went through recently, Zeltzerman's Small Crimes. I think it has that feel. You know, protagonist in that story, what an asshole. You know, because that's what criminals are. It's assholes. They're not people you want to spend a lot of time with. And I think that gets glossed over by folks that they're trying to write a more traditional crime story.
Yeah, I like that that thinking. I mean, it's there's so much going on in the world right now. I think there's a lot of fear out there, and a lot of kind of a dark and dangerous world. There's a real fear of poverty. There's a real fear of things just falling apart. And I think something about this, you know, this fiction just kind of shows us tough people in a tough world, and to your point, not the brightest. I think it was Donald Westlake talking about his Parker character, that he was a guy out of the 1930s because he's intelligent, he's really sharp, he has skills, and during the Great Depression, you know, going into bank robbery was a lucrative business that attracted some sharp minds. But today, it doesn't, so it attracts the bottom of the barrel, so to speak.
Well, you know, I tell you,
so Tom,
I don't mean to cut you off, but there's a book. Speaking of like my obsession with nonfiction, years ago in the crime stuff, you know, there was this sort of, the Goodfellas movie did a lot to sort of break the idea that the whole mafia, the romance of the mafia thing, because people had, you know, there was books like Honor Thy Father and The Godfather and stuff like that out. They kind of like romanticized it. And there was one book, a nonfiction book by T.J. English called The Westies, which was about, you know, the bumbling fucking Irish crew in the 80s in Hell's Kitchen. And they were fuck-ups. They were drunks. And that really opened my eyes to what that kind of criminality really was, and that always stuck with me. And I think from reading that book, that put the seeds in me for what I wanted to finally, you know, when I was able, when I had my shit together enough to put down a comprehensible tale, that to share what I thought it really was like to be a criminal. So hats off to him and wherever the heck he is. But yeah, and years later, you know, this is a funny story. You know, 25 years later, TJ English wrote me on Facebook, and I think probably because I dropped his name so fucking much, and had me send him a couple books, and you know, and to, yeah, it was, that was a great sort of bucket list moment for me, you know. So that was one
cool.
of my heroes
yeah.
reaching out. Yeah, but I'm sorry, I cut you off. What was your question?
Oh, no worries, man. Everybody wants to hear you, not me. I was just going to say, you know, aside from writing, Tom, you've had your hands in a few other things too. I believe you've done some, you know, some publishing work, and you also host a podcast on crime fiction. You know, tell us about the other things you do.
Well, Skid Row Chatter, which has kind of been in hiatus the past 6 months or so, and as far as I know, I have a show coming up next week with Joe Clifford, my partner in crime. And hopefully we can revive it and kickstart it again. It was doing all right for a minute, but I had the sort of pressure for me to prepare for each author and each episode was conflicting with whatever was going on with my life at the time, which was actually switching from a night job to a day job where I didn't have time to even answer an email, let alone read a book. So it got kind of tough. So I kind of put that on hold, and hopefully that's coming back. And Gutter Books, you know, they were all just sort of window dressing on the writing career. You know, they helped. Well, certainly being I'm technically an acquisitions editor at Gutter Books, but we don't really put out a lot of books. You know, I think we've been doing one or two a year for the past several years. But while that was going on, up until very recently, when Hector and Rob took over, Joe and I were the editors of Flash Fiction Offensive, and that really was a great experience in the sense that not only did it improve my ability to sort of edit and just sort of and proofread and all the sort of things that are you know extraneous to the actual gig, but it also introduced me to authors. That's where I found out about John Ashley. We were just talking about him before we went on, and just a lot of guys that I wouldn't have come across or had contact with. And the thing about the Flash Fiction Offensive was, you know, it's a place where we weren't looking for, you know, people who would, you know, establish careers. It was a lot of people starting out, and a lot of people, it was the first place that got published. And it was a great thing to be a part of that, you know, that big moment in someone's writing career. You know, for my own self, the most exciting thing that happened to me, there's been like, you know, movie buzz. I've had a couple books published. I got, you know, the things that sound pretty great on paper, but nothing was as exciting as getting that first acceptance letter. You know, that, you know, even though it was just some online magazine that I think is now defunct and, you know, the story wasn't that great or whatever the case, it's that magic was that's what propelled me forward, the thinking I could do the next thing. And it was great being a part of that on a weekly basis in people's lives. So I'm appreciative of that. But I eventually stepped down, you know, when I switched to a day job, boy, it's changed a lot of things in my life. I'm still having trouble adjusting and trying to figure out where in my day I can block out time for what I love, which is writing.
Wow. Yeah, fantastic. So speaking of writing, what does that process look like for you? You know, would you say you write every day? You know, do you outline your books? Just kind of jump in with an idea and see where it goes. What's your process?
I am a fan of the idea that you take a couple characters, and you have a couple characters, maybe even just one, and you put them in a situation and then let the story unfold. And it sounds kind of corny, and it's, you know, that's the old Stephen King kind of idea that he professes that how his stuff works. But for me, it's very true, and there's a couple reasons why I do it. One, is to keep it fresh, keep it exciting, because you don't know where it's going, and you also have options to change gears and directions as it evolves. You know, if story's getting too complicated and you got to kill a couple guys off, you can do it. You know, you don't have an outline saying you know that guy's got to do this at the end of the story. You can let it weave wherever it takes you. And the other part is, I don't think I'm organized enough to have plots and to adhere to them. I've never been that guy. I was never the kid who did homework. I've got no formal education. So just sort of, you know, writing a book almost like I'm reading a book and discovering what's happening as I go along is part of the magic for me. So that's what I really enjoy.
Cool. And which authors would you say have had the most influence on you as a writer?
Well, it's you know, I got asked this the other day, and after I'd answered, I realized that, you know, it's sometimes it's not so much the author so much as individual books or point in time, you know, like that Teach English book, you know, that book, you know, truly had a great influence on me, you know, and not for its style, but for its content, you know, and you know, Benjamin Whitmer, he has a great influence on me, not so much for the story, but for the style. And I don't think I ape his style, and I don't think I could ape his style, and you know, I but however, you know, just the beauty of that guy's prose makes me just want to try harder, and it makes me realize that my sentences are not as tight and clean and as purposeful and poetic as I want them to be. You know, sometimes it's that. It's not so much they influence you, but just they kick you in the shins. And occasionally, there's somebody like Cormac McCarthy who just makes you want to just give up. But you know, that you kind of got to push that past that and keep trying. So, you know, I think that's an evolving thing, you know.
Yeah, no, great. So, you know, think about somebody out there listening who, you know, they're sitting down to write their first novel. Maybe they're already working on it. What advice would you give to somebody in that situation?
You know, I often say clarity is the thing, you know, because what you're doing is you're trying to communicate what's in your head. And in my head, I'm making a movie in my head. Even though I'm writing a book, I'm really wanting that, what I'm seeing in my head, for the reader to see. And it's never going to be the same. The reader, you know, you put a guy in a room on a bed with a gun, you know, it might be a red room in your head, but it's going to be a blue room in the reader's head, you know? And so that's never going to, but the clarity of what's happening is very important. You need to be able to communicate as best you can what that is. And that's keeping it clean. That's not crowding it with a lot of with a lot of extra stuff. You gotta stick to basics. The other thing, and I'm, you know, that Stephen King thing, I've never read, well, I think I read The Shining when I was young. I barely read any Stephen King in my life, and I'm not a big fan of his stuff, or you know, it's never really compelled me to write. But I did read On Writing, and On Writing is chock full of really good, simple advice that makes it seem possible that anybody, and I don't, you know, I don't think it's necessarily true that anybody can, but those who are willing to push forward, it just makes it seem doable, you know. Like when punk rock hit, you know, music seemed like some sort of weird alchemy that these rock stars made. And then punk rock hit, and you know, it sort of made it seem like anybody could do it. There was a do-it-yourself sort of ethos to it, and I think that's what the King book On Writing gave me, was like a lot of simple tips. They say, yeah, you can do it. Just push forward. It doesn't matter. Shit will develop as it goes along. And so I think, you know, picking up that book, if you're lost or confused or you know, and there's simple things in that book, like, you know, grammatical tips and you know, how to use some punctuation properly and stuff that should seem very basic, but he lays it out in such a clear and clean way. I can't say enough how much that helped me when I was writing my first novella, Piggyback, so long ago.
Yeah, that's a great book. And to your point, he makes it simple, even the grammatical stuff. I think it was maybe Dennis Lehane who said something along the lines of, you know, when all else fails, just tell the story, right? And I go back to that a lot when I'm writing something. I'm like, you know, I got to make this scene more exciting. I got to make it more, and then, you know, I'm like, just tell the story, and that helps me a lot too.
Well, and it's the same advice
So
you hear
Tom.
from author after author. Elmer Leonard said the same, you know, the same stuff. That it's, you know, just all that the underlying themes and the ideas and the reoccur, all that stuff just happens naturally if you do just stick to your own truth and tell the story, you know. And that's keeping it simple. Which also, you know, it
And I
applies to
love that
painting, it
style,
applies
you
to
know.
cooking, it applies to music, it applies to almost everything. You know, like less is more is a good rule of thumb to lean back on if you're wondering whether you need to, you know, add a little extra salt.
I love that. I love that. That's true. You know, I think of the Rolling Stones, you know, that some of those songs like I've Got the Blues, where there's just this tiny little snippet of a Hammond organ that just kind of comes out of nowhere and then disappears. And you're like, wow, that was fantastic, but it only lasts a couple of seconds. And they could have made the whole album with that, but less is more. It really is, you know, it really makes the art. And I like that cinematic style of writing. You know, you're watching a movie on page. You don't have to go into all this flowery prose. You don't have to have deep POV where you know everything everybody's thinking and you know their life history. Just record the events that are happening, right? I think
true.
Hemingway might have been, yeah. So what new and exciting projects are you working on these days? I know we've got American Static coming out in like 8 or 9 days. What else is there out there we can look forward to?
Well, American Static sort of I think I finished that in like 2014. It was done and shopped for a few years, and I switched agents, and it got shopped a little more, and then Eric Campbell stuck his hand out and said, you know, hey, I'll take on Hustle. Give me what else you got. And that's it. I don't need to keep on banging my head against the wall. But in the meantime, I had written a book called Cold Water, which is, you know, also set in, actually starts in Sacramento, ends up in Malibu, but it's still a very California story and has a, you know, a big piece of San Francisco in it. And I just finished a book called 101. That's the backdrop is the marijuana industry up in Humboldt. But of course it's a chase down to San Francisco, and it's a fast paced thriller once again. And I'm very proud of that. And hopefully it's those two are just about done. So what's next for me is I've got to sit down and write a new book, which means, you know, figuring out, I've been, you know, getting up at 5:30 in the morning, starting to train my brain again so I can get in, you know, some writing before 10 when I go to work, and, you know, break some time at night to edit and try to get literally back in shape. It's almost, you know, it's almost like a training I gotta do it in prep. I've taken a month off of you know, having edited the last books just to do promo for American Static. I thought, you know, I'm going to just take some time and not try to overwhelm myself and, you know, do some guest blogs, do the interviews and set up some stuff and focus. But when that's done, I got to get back to it. And I'm anxious to get back in that, in the world that I can control, that, you know, the world that, you know, I want to be in rather than the brutal world that I exist in, just the one where, you know, I can't pay my bills and I got a tough job and, you know, all those regular troubles of life seem to fall away while I create horrific experiences for somebody else. I hope.
Wow. A lot of exciting stuff to watch for, and, you know, best wishes with all those projects up and coming. Tom, man, thanks so much for coming on the show, you know, and talking to us about your work. It's been a blast having you on, and I'd love to do this again someday soon.
Hey, thank you, and it's been great talking to you. Well, not quite face to face, but I've never spoken to you before, and it's been a pleasure. I hope sometime we can get face to face and maybe tip a few and commiserate about the life of a noir writer.
Let's do that. Let's do that. I want to get out that way. We'll figure it out. And you know, for the listeners. So it's hard to imagine you haven't, but if you haven't done so already, check out Tom Pitt's books, Hustle, Piggyback, Knuckleball. Go ahead and pre-order American Hustle. Watch for it on the 26th. You know you want it. And, you know, these books are just the epitome of everything we talk about on this show. And once you've had a chance to read those, my new novel, Everglade, which is the fifth and final volume of the Selena series, will be out July 1st from All Due Respect Books. And this podcast is sponsored by Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. And you can find Down and Out Books at www.downandoutbooks.com. And until next time, this is Greg Barth with Noir on the Radio. And Noir on the Radio is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC.